Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to the 7 years, maybe, in the making, second annual.
It sure seems that way.
The seventh tenniel.
Yes. The second podcast. Sorry, I'm sure we're pissing off all our legions of two fans out there, including our mothers. And we're back. We're strong and we're better than ever. I'm Mike.
I'm James.
And I'm Jesse, and welcome to the second installment of, are we Tidbits and Tallywhackers or Tallywhackers and Tidbits?
I'm actually, I want to shorten it just to Tids and Tallies.
Let's How about TNT?
Tids and Tallies. TNT, there TNT. You go. We have to say, we have to raise a glass to our fallen comrade.
No, we have to pour a tip, I have to pour my
pour one out, pour a like Tupac.
For my homie.
Like Tupac.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, just one for my homie.
Our esteemed colleague and fourth member,
Josh,
he couldn't make it. Tonight. He had honeydews tonight.
What's
so
his name?
His
the dude that
Jimmy,
the,
Timmy,
the dude that
Josh.
Edits this.
Josh,
just kidding.
Josh. All right. So today we're talking about a lot of things. We've got a lot to cover. We're gonna have our first segment is just gonna be quick hits. We're talking about a lot of things happening in the world of pop culture. I know I have the thing I want to talk about. We're also gonna talk about a powerhouse of cinema that has been unleashed on us over the last 2 months, namely. The return of James Bond, true to form, Skyfall has hit us, and then a cinematic juggernaut that may be the most polarizing piece of cinema to come across in quite some time, Cloud Atlas. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk some music, which is Jesse's forte, of course. He's got a soapbox, and he
has nothing prepared. But I'll
trust
him.
Right. He got something
complete
to whip up.
Total BS. He will have something prepared. Yep. And if he doesn't, he'll still talk for an hour. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back, and let's quick hit on the Tids and Tallies, Tad Bits and Tillywackas, TNT, whatever the hell we call this show. We'll be right back. God needs strength, woman. Believe me, this chick's no sin. But I really get her going. And then I give out my big 10-inch red. All right, we're back. Before we jump into music and cinema talk, and trust me, we have a lot to talk about. Boom. Let's do pop culture quick hits. Who wants to go first? Spin the topic wheel. Who's going first? Jump in.
Hey, Vanna. No, wait, that's Jeopardy. I'll take the rapists for 800.
The rapists for 800, Alex.
The therapist.
The therapist.
I can go first. I got a great story.
Go for it.
So I came across something. One of my favorite websites to read about politics and pop culture is Gawker. And I read this story, and basically it's filed under beef. So they always
Where's the beef?
Anyway,
It's
what's for dinner. In a nutshell, the headline of the story is Stevie Nicks. So if you guys are Fleetwood Mac fans.
Oh, yeah.
Stevie Nicks, Goldust Woman, calmly discusses murdering Nicki Minaj.
She makes me come down, make me get down out of your vision of love. Sorry.
I'm staring at you.
I'd never.
I'm silently murdering
ever
you.
Ever want to hear that again.
Ever.
Sorry. Continue, please.
The headline says Stevie Nicks calmly discusses murdering Nicki Minaj. Now, if you guys are a fan of making fun of music on TV, music shows like The Voice and American Idol, like I am, you'll know that American Idol has redone their
yes,
they
yes.
basically fired everybody except for Randy Jackson, who I have no idea why that guy has survived like a cockroach.
Oh, dog, come on,
Yo, dog. I played bass for Journey
it's
50 years
pitchy.
Ago.
It's a little pitchy.
Anyway,
what?
So Mariah Carey and Nicki Minaj are the two female hosts, and there's been rumors that they have not been getting along.
Can I just? I'm just going to say three words.
Yes,
vinegar. And oil.
Right. No, I have one word for you. Ratings. Yes. So, anyway, I read this article, and it basically...
a couple more words. Jump the shark.
Right.
Right.
So,
right.
Basically, Stevie Nicks is being interviewed, and she said, how dare this little girl? If I had been Mariah, I would have walked over to Nicki and strangled her to death right there. Apparently, she made some comment about...
keep reading.
Hold on.
Can I tell you a quick Mariah Carey story?
You can.
And
it was really funny.
This is no
BS. I read this like a week ago.
I worked in radio for a while, and there was a running bit like which star had the weirdest or most ridiculous thing in their writer, right?
Oh yeah, it's like the Van Halen.
And there were
the M&Ms,
but like
right.
there were a lot of really weird ones.
Or the Black Sabbath, like all like. Single color, like M&Ms.
Glenn Danzig actually takes the cake from 100% has the weirdest one. I'll talk about that
the
later.
Soup thing?
No. It's worse than that. Trust right. me. And stupid. But so Mariah Carey actually was booked for this gig, where she was actually it wasn't even performing. She was just accepting an award at a show and a top 40 radio station. And in her rider, she had specifically if wherever her backstage area was.
Oh, is this kittens?
No.
Oh.
if from her backstage dressing room to the stage, if there was any place that she had to walk on that was not concrete, i.e. if there was grass, dirt, anything that was unpaved, they had to actually lay plywood down and tack it to the ground.
Wow.
I'm not making this up.
That's insane.
Wow.
My point why.
But she is in heels a lot. And I'm strangely attracted to her. And part of it's because she's freaking crazy.
Yeah, she is
bat.
But then she's
crazy.
Married to Nick Cannon, which.
The luckiest man on earth, I will maintain to this day. Yes. You want to talk about what? Anyway, so my point was, is I'm reading this article and I'm thinking to myself, has Stevie Nicks have nothing better to do than weigh in on this supposed feud between Nicki Minaj and Mariah Carey?
She can't.
But not only that. People are reporting on it. This is top news in the beef section of the Gawker.
In my humble opinion, I think Fleetwood Mac is like one of the most underrated rock bands of all time.
No, Lindsay
Table
Buckingham.
That. Table that. Go
Lindsay
ahead.
Buckingham.
Go. I want to hear what she said about Nicki Minaj.
So she says, how dare this little girl? If I had been Mariah, I would have walked over to her and strangled her to death. And then they say, if you didn't get that, here's further clarification. I would have killed her in front of the entire show and had to go to jail for it.
Okay, so I'm gonna. Nice. I have to. This is gonna make me sound stupid. I don't. I know there was some beef, but what happened?
Well, you know, it's just the usual. While they're auditioning, they started squabbling over stuff, and someone threatened somebody with a eyelash pencil or whatever they call it. Anyway, so I just found.
You said it best. Ratings.
Ratings. So I found it very funny that Stevie Nicks sitting in Arizona in her home, you know, with her scented candles and you know, whatever she does, found time to weigh in on this feud. Yeah. So. That's my sad little world.
So my pop culture quick hit for the week is very topical because it just aired 2 days ago or a day ago. Strangely, I found myself, and I can't believe I'm saying this, because when growing up, I mean, he was it. And it's a sad state of affairs because the years, at least in his catalog, have not been kind to him and have dwindled, I think, his impact, but that's not to say that he didn't have maybe the greatest impact for sure for me personally, but his impact on his industry is unparalleled, and there will never be another like him, really, when you look at the retrospective. But Comedy Central aired 2 nights ago the Eddie Murphy One Night Only, two-hour showcase that was all about Eddie Murphy, yep. all the greatest hits, all the greatest bits. And wow, I mean, you want to talk about a stroll down memory lane.
Let me put it to you this way.
Wow.
My daughter, who is now 4, when she hears the ice cream truck come by, you know what she yells?
Ice cream
man!
You know, a lot of people, I think people our age know, but for the younger folks, the millennials, as they're called, they really don't know, because this guy, when he was at the top of his game, Raw, probably at the apex.
Absolutely.
He was a freaking rock star.
Absolutely. Dude, he sold out arenas.
Rock.
He sold out 20,000
seat arenas to watch stand up.
A dude alone in a Michael Jackson red suit,
in leather.
Just go off.
Which,
drop F bombs for 2
Martin
hours.
Lawrence had the best line. He goes, Martin Lawrence, you know, typical Martin Lawrence. He's like, man, y'all don't know, man. I met Eddie on a Sunday, and he was wearing that leather, man. That nigga wore that shit to Kmart.
So, if you want to, we could do a whole episode about, you know, paying homage to Eddie Murphy. But obviously,
yes.
Dave Chappelle's defunct show where he had Charlie Murphy.
Yes, Charlie Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Murphy's older brother.
Older brother.
Yeah. Yes.
Honestly,
yeah.
Those were the story with Prince and basketball and making pancakes. And
oh, man.
I know you didn't buy that at the men's store. You know, that's a lady's shirt. Anyway.
Every stand-up in the late 80s owes everything they ever did to Eddie Murphy.
Well, absolutely. You could say, so black stand-up, and I'm an extremely white individual, but You look at Richard Pryor.
Stand up, period.
Well, so,
I agree. I'm not taking anything with Richard Pryor's genius, but Eddie took it to another level.
And you could say today that basically stand up sucks.
Mm. I disagree.
Besides Louis C.K.,
It went back to where it's like hip hop. A lot of people say, hip hop is still alive and well. It's just whack where it started. It's in the underground. You got to dig in the crates. You got to listen.
I read an interview with, or it was a piece on this in Rolling Stone on this guy Kevin, this black comedian
Kevin James.
No, not Here Comes the Boom.
Hey, you know what?
All cop.
That guy's paid his dues. I like Kevin
James.
Some
guy is black comedian. He clocks like 100 G's a show.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. The short guy.
Yeah.
Somebody pull up the internet. Why can't I think of the guy's name? I know who you're talking about. Anyways.
Yes.
Little short guy. He's actually pretty funny.
Fodder for another show. Anyway, James, anything good for pop culture you want to talk about before we move on to the next segment?
I mean, you know me. I'm the resident Star Wars geek, so I mean, I'll geek
out. $4 billion.
$4 billion.
Is it bad that I actually could give two?
No.
You know
whoa,
what?
Whoa!
I could care less.
Okay, so let's step back here for a minute. So everybody is like immediately when they're saying like Star Wars got bought out by Disney. Oh my God! It's just gonna become like this. It's not gonna be like the same Star Wars we knew about it. Like, and it's gonna be completely like fucked, and it's not gonna be.
It's gonna be terrible.
No.
It's going to be terrible. Disney owns it.
There's too much riding on. So when they almost like as soon as like the announcement was made, they laid out their entire strategy for this thing.
It was already laid out.
We want it to be like this thing that's going to last a lifetime, pretty much, is what they said. And there's too much for that. They just can't mess it up. It's going to be something that they have to put like quality writers and directors behind.
What you would hope is that it would be something like the Avengers, right? That they would put that much love into it, that much.
Yeah, and
I don't think it's going to happen.
No, it is.
I read something in Rolling Stone.
There's too
with
much
James
writing
Vaughn
on it.
The cover with Daniel Craig on the cover, and they're asking other directors like, "How would you approach it?" And you know, so Kevin,
Smith,
but Evan Smith. I would just do what George Lucas, or no, I would forget what Lucas wants to do. I would make a whole movie about Boba Fett. Okay.
Which would be right. Cool.
Which would be great,
I would
but
watch that.
That's like porn for Star Wars fanatics, right? That's
Boba Fett is my favorite. Like,
it's everyone's favorite because every dude wants to be a bounty hunter and
whatever you want to call it. He's like my favorite like lower tier character out of the entire series. But so the thing is, like, I think there's too much writing on it for them to like not get it right. But on the same side though, that's my hope. As a fan, but I hear kids today like they love parts 1 through 3 of the trilogy.
Everyone likes parts 1 through 3.
Hang on. I can speak to that because I have an 11-year-old, and I have
the
an 8-year-old.
The original ones were 3, 4, and 5, right?
Yeah. No. 4, 5, and 6.
4, 5, and 6.
Sorry, so, take back what I said earlier.
So all of my sons and my daughter too, but you know they have no problems. And right. I've always sort of defended the original or the prequels.
Right.
With that, hey, we're all jaded.
Right.
You know, we're jaded because we're not seeing things through the lenses that we saw the first movies through.
But I wouldn't
where we sat there and we're like, oh my gosh, the Star Wars cantina. You're like, your jaw, floor, bam, over, right? Like, we're not seeing it through those lenses. And my kids, for sure, watched and went, wow. So, but that's not to say. I mean, Jar Jar, there's a lot of problems, for sure. I mean, I'm not trying to be the total blind faith apologist.
Bottom line is, I wouldn't necessarily call it jaded. It's just a different time, a different place, and the kids today, like, they've gravitated to this incarnation in the Star Wars trilogy, and that's totally cool. I could think of, like, of a lot worse films that I've seen than this trilogy, but,
Here's the thing, we gotta wrap this up, but I would just say that I really hope that Disney understands what they have.
Yes.
And that they really take
care of it. That's what we're hoping for. Yeah.
That's what we're hoping for.
And
so
we're gonna go ahead
and take a quick break, and we come back. We are going to talk at length about the wonderful genius that is Cloud Atlas. So go ahead and take a pee break.
We'll be right back after these messages. All right, we are back. Some of us about 2 pounds lighter, but
how do you spell relief?
Yeah, ooh, yeah, that's
P-I-S-S. So we want to go ahead and talk about Cloud Atlas. For those of you that are movie buffs, such as us, there's been a lot of interesting banter throughout the interwebs and in print about this movie that was released.
Absolutely.
The three of us actually had a chance to go actually see it together.
Yes.
It was a very nice experience.
A group outing.
We held hands.
Yes.
Had some popcorn.
We hugged.
We had a bonding moment. We had a bonding moment. And to coin a phrase from the Sonic guys, you know, it was like going on a outdoor excursion that didn't get weird.
That's right. Yeah. So I know how I feel, but I'd like to toss it over to my esteemed colleagues, James and Mike.
For me personally, I thought it was like one of the best cinematic experiences I've had in a very long time, like in a movie, just completely engrossing. And you know, you hear about for so long, like people just complain about like film and just how
unoriginal,
that's just,
derivative.
Yeah, derivative, and like everything that's coming out like nowadays.
Now let's clarify.
It's based on a book.
It is based on a book. Let's clarify.
It is.
A really good book, by the way.
But at the same time, a very difficult book to turn into a film.
Yes. But, considered by many to be unadaptable.
But the point is, you know, it's not the run-of-the-mill, like, sequel or remake or, you know, just very superficial type of story. It's very engrossing, and it takes a lot of you to – it asks a lot of you as a viewer to put yourself into it and to invest yourself as a viewer. And for me, I have not had an experience like that in a major like released film, like in like mainstream cinema, in a very, very, very long time. And for me, I got completely out of it what I put into it, and I think it's one of the most phenomenally like made films in a very, very, very long time.
You know, I think the thing for me when we walked out,
I know that's a lot of hyperbole right there, but like it's.
No, but you know, I think that's fair, and I think if you remember the first thing I said,
I'm picking up what you're laying down.
When we walked out, the first thing I said to you guys was, "I was like, look, before we even say we liked it, we didn't like it. If you're if you love cinema, you love film, and to even take it a step further, if you love art, you can't knock what they attempted to do, and the effort is worth the price of admission, because they forged into complete unknown territory. The way that the story was told, the way the narrative unfolded, no one has ever seen anything like this.
Right.
And that is one of the main reasons why I think it's so polarizing and so divisive. Is it's, you know, I hate to go back to Moneyball, but which. Man, that movie just keeps getting better and better and better, by the way. I don't want to sidetrack. But, you know, at the end when he's talking to Mr. Henry from the Red Sox, and Mr. Henry says, you know, hey, the first guy through the door, man, he's always gets his face is always bloodied. And I think that's very indicative of this film, because whenever you try something new, you know, it's just going to be something that people don't get and don't understand.
Right.
They're going to face a lot of adversity.
Yes.
It's a very non-linear, like, story structure throughout the entire film. Like, I mean, and that's what I think, like, people get hung up on. It's like they have to figure out, like,
yeah,
oh.
They walk out and they go, what the hell just
happened?
What
did I just – yeah. But how – it jumps – like, I've never seen a film like that just jumps in time periods, like, so quickly throughout, like –
That's why I want to see it again, though. I cannot wait to see it again because
maybe 10-minute intervals.
I'm guessing that there's more in sync than we realized. I think there's a lot that's
hacking up a lung there. Buddy.
Yeah, I know, boy.
My sinus.
There's a lot more that's congruent than we really because it's literally a friend of mine used to say this all the time, and I've used it before, but it's like taking a sip of water from a fire hose. It's really hard to digest, and that's not to say that hey, I'm not trying to be, you know, hey, you didn't get it, well, you're stupid. And no, it's challenging. It's definitely challenging. It's a movie that challenges you. That it says, "Hey, here it is. Keep up."
I think for me, and you guys can probably attest to this. I know you and I had discussions before we saw the movie. Out of the three of us, I was the least interested in seeing this movie. I had a conversation with Mike, and I said, "You know what? I saw the preview, and I was just like, well, okay, I'll get around to it." So coming into it, everybody thought that, oh, Jesse's going to hate it. Like, I remember Josh was, we were texting, and he said, this is pretty much how it's going to be. It's going to be you three, you know, we're all going to like it, and Jesse's just going to be like, this is terrible.
Josh ended up not liking
it.
Right.
Which is ironic because
he was the one who was like, oh, I have so many issues with the movie.
Yeah.
However,
he's come around, though, a little bit.
Okay, so yeah, I remember.
But not so much. He was here tonight, and he's just like, no, I still... Not yeah. digging
so
it at all.
I remember walking out of the movie and we talked, and the first things out of my mouth to you guys was, oh my, this movie was amazing. So I think for me going into it with like zero expectation was awesome. The other thing is, I think I'm not sure which one of you guys sent me the link, but it was
Roger Ebert's review.
Ebert's review. Yes. I read that and it stuck with me because he watched it twice.
Yep.
And when he went through the second time, he said, I just enjoyed the movie. I stopped trying to understand what was going on, and I let this beautiful movie
all over you.
Take me on this journey. Yep. And I started, after I read that, I started thinking back about the movie, and I'm like, you know what? This is such a brilliant – it's like a painting.
And to me, that's
–
Hold on.
It's a painting. It's like a Monet. This is the – you could feel – it's very hard sometimes to – feel what the directors, their emotions when they film something.
Real quick, three directors.
Why are you checking email?
Three directors, because I'm pulling up a quote that from the Ebert
but interview. It's very rare that you can actually
three directors.
Sense what like the love that was put into it. But this movie was so beautifully crafted that if you like movies, period, whether you like the storyline or not, you have to appreciate this film.
And that's what –
because of what you said. It's never been done before. And bottom line, they took a huge risk. It's not making a lot of money.
Yep, no.
Which it will later on. It will. It'll make money on when it goes to
DVD. It'll be a cult cinema type thing.
But this movie –
Where film students 20 years from now will point back and say, hey, this is a shining example of
You know what it is? It's 2001.
It is.
2001 is Space totally Odyssey.
Is.
For this generation,
it totally is.
Right.
And hang on real quick before I forget. I wanted to pull up. That's actually what I was checking. Is there was a quote from the Ebert review, which I respect Ebert. I think a lot of times I disagree with him. A lot of times I agree with him. But this was one of the.
He's no Peter Travers.
I mainly disagree.
This was one of the. I loved his review and the way it was written because he didn't tell. He didn't say anything. He just said go. Go let it happen to you, essentially. He didn't review the movie. He didn't give you a synopsis. He was just like, look, this is kind of like we've been saying. This is new. Just go and let it unfold.
So basically
here's the quote that he said, and I wrote it down because I wanted to bring it up. He said, any explanation of a work of art must be found in it, not taken to it. And that – to me, summarizes what this movie is about. Don't go in with any preconceived notions.
Just enjoy it.
Let it take you on
an adventure.
And let go and just see where it takes you it's pretty amazing.
For those of you listening, basically what those of us here at TNT are saying is if you have 3 hours to spare.
And it's a quick 3 hour. It really
it
is
a quick. Honestly, it really went by quickly. We all love the movie.
I think it was wonderfully paced. It didn't feel like it dragged at any point whatsoever.
There's fantastic humor in it. You know,
unexpected humor.
We give
very unexpected humor.
We give it two thumbs up. And now
four thumbs up.
Three.
One thing I do want to comment that I think is really important that I really respect about the directors, the Wachowskis, and
a German and one transgender and a Jew.
Not transgender anymore. No. It's full blown.
He lopped it off.
Yes.
Sorry,
100% Yes.
Wow.
Lana.
Yeah.
But one of the things that they did when they were adapting the book, they all agreed that, hey, we're gonna work together, we're gonna write this,
right.
We're gonna present it to the author. If he doesn't give us the seal of approval and thumbs up, we're walking away.
We're not gonna do it. Yeah.
We're walking away.
Yeah.
You know, again, any artist has to respect that because they're not chasing a buck.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's
my point, is that you can feel the labor of love. So
100%.
We're gonna take a quick break, and we come back, we're gonna talk about the amazing new James Bond installment.
Welcome back. Substantial break for us, short break for you. Everybody wins.
Boom.
So let's talk about the world of 007. I will enact a virtual cone of silence because I still have not seen.
Can you be like the moderator for the presidential elections?
Yes.
The one guy who was completely lost in the first one. Not Obama.
Let me kick it off like this, and then I'm just going to defer to you, and then I'll check out for a little bit. And
why did you point at him? Why wouldn't you defer to me?
I did a two-tone thingy there.
Yeah.
I did not like. I haven't seen Quantum of Solace. I did not like Casino Royale.
What?
I thought Casino Royale was let's make Bond like the Bourne movies because that's what's hip now, is this gritty action.
Can I go first, please, James?
Let me just have my soapbox on Casino Royale, and then you guys can have fun with. And I'm sure Skyfall is great. I've heard
it. Go for it.
I just felt like it was just pandering. Oh, let's reinvent Bond and make him gritty and in your face and shaky cam and fights and Paul Greengrass and blah 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 blah. Oh, and you know what? Because it's topical, let's James Bond doesn't play baccarat anymore. He goes to this exclusive ultra elite French chateau, and what game do they play? Texas Hold'em. Yes, that's what they play in all French chateaus nowadays.
Are you
done? Texas Hold'em.
Are you just about done?
Yes, I'm now off the soapbox. You guys convince your
Skyfall. I'm going to go ahead and take the lead on this one, James, if you
don't
mind.
Yeah, go for it.
First off, I want to say
Texas Hold'em, by the way. We're going to play that in France. Who's with me? Sorry.
I feel like I am well-versed in James Bond. I'd like to give a big shout-out to my mom, which I never do stuff like this. But
me too. Sorry.
Easy.
Low-hanging fruit.
Wow. I've seen every Bond movie. My mom is a huge Bond fan, and my brothers and I grew up watching James Bond. So to counterpoint your ridiculous rant on James Bond, if you actually read the books that they were based off
Heavens
of,
to Murgatroyd.
Daniel Craig,
really rotten.
Dude, let me finish.
Sorry,
Daniel Craig. The way he portrayed it was actually how James Bond was originally written. This ridiculous. So in my mind, Daniel Craig and Sean Connery are the two best James Bonds. Everybody else, it was never the martini shaken not stirred tuxedo. Smooth operator. He was a very dark and troubled guy. He was an orphan No, you can't.
People don't read.
I know they don't.
Understood.
So having said that,
people don't read good.
I was actually very excited when they cast Daniel Craig because I love Layer Cake.
Layer Cake is very good.
Very good. And awesome. I loved Casino Royale. Quantum of Solace was eh. However, Skyfall, in my mind, is probably in the top five best Bond movies ever. Number one being Goldfinger.
Hands down.
What I loved about this movie was...
I don't expect you to live, Mr. Bond, and I expect you to die.
That's right. What I loved about the movie was, first of all, it was just action. From the Bond films have been known for their opening sequences, right? So whether you like Casino Royale or not, that opening sequence when he chases that guy on foot was insane.
You mean the parkour sequence?
The what?
The parkour sequence.
Parkour.
Do you not? Oh, wow. I thought we were a pop culture podcast. Do you not know what parkour is?
No. Park life?
Parkour. Blur? Parkour is the technical term for free running.
Okay. Yes. That was great. So the James Bond movies have always, like I said, have always been known for their opening sequences. And Skyfall definitely did not disappoint. I mean, I'm not going to give away no spoilers, but it's like right off the bat, it's a gut punch. And
Are there silhouettes of naked chicks? Is all there,
so, and that's the other thing. There was the Bond girl was not a focus in this movie at all. But this was Bond getting back to it. I mean, this guy is broken.
Exactly. And
right.
To tag on to that, the thing that I loved about this Bond film more than any other was the fact that it focused on his...
By the way, we were seeing it at the same time, and I want to apologize. I don't know why I didn't invite you.
That's okay.
But you were at Cinemark, and I was at IPIC.
It's okay. It's all right. I wasn't upset or anything. It's okay. The reason why I love this Bond more than any other is because of the fact, like, it focused on his humanity. It focused on, like, not only a little bit of a backstory.
You got a glimpse into who he was.
You get a little bit of glimpse on who he was, a little bit of backstory in his life, but...
He's a bad motherfucker. Shut your mouth.
Well, no, he was still a bad motherfucker. You know, he slid his wallet across the table and still said bad motherfucker.
Please give me a spoiler alert so I can enact Cone of Silence, because I don't want to get any spoilers.
Hey. I'm going to rein in the spoilers here. But the point I'm trying to make is saying they actually showed him where he felt vulnerable. Like he was hurt in certain scenes.
Was he barefoot in a 40-story building?
No, shut up.
No.
So they played certain scenes in the film where you didn't get that sense. Like in previous films, like, there was a feeling, oh my God, he's indestructible. He's almost like a superhero.
Yeah, he was broken.
In a way.
The guy basically did not pass.
Exactly.
The like,
gas.
Well, basically,
he was a superhero. Like he didn't get hurt in the and in this film, like, so there were previous.
He didn't pass
films.
His test to get reinstated back as an agent.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was maybe Thunderball where.
Isn't that Mad Max? That's Thunderdome. Sorry.
No, Thunderball.
Can't wait for that one, by the way. Four.
Where they thought he was dead. And...
Spoiler!
And that was... No. That was kind of this... The first time, like, in Bond films, like, where it kind of made it feel like, you know, there's still a human here. There's still a human aspect to all this. But for the most part, throughout the entire series...
Are you saying he's not a robot?
He's not a robot.
Whatever.
Cone of Silence.
Let me finish my point.
You gonna get to a point at some time? Arrive at a point,
dude.
So the shortest distance between two lines is not James's eulogies.
Jesus Christ. Anyways, so the main point is like this film like showed like a real like human aspect to him. Like this is a guy that is vulnerable. He can get hurt. And he's not like this crazy superhero, like just like Superman, like bullets just bounce off him or
so,
whatever.
So great casting. Javier Bardem was
awesome.
Continues his creepy haircut.
Creepy haircut,
creepy character.
But I love it.
He's so perfect.
Creepy in a different way, though. This was one of the first Bond villains that actually like used kind of sexuality in a way that was very funny and different. And it caught you off guard.
I was uncomfortable during that scene.
But at the same time, it was really, really funny.
So, great casting. Javier Bardem, like I said. What was actually pleasantly surprising to me was that...
I think we're getting too much into spoiler territory with Mike here.
That's fine. What was actually interesting to me is I didn't know that Sam Mendes directed this movie. And I'm a big fan of Sam Mendes.
Road to Perdition.
Yeah, Road to Perdition.
Roger Deakins, amazing
American
cinematography.
Beauty.
Is he the cinematographer?
Yes. Ooh. Freaking amazing.
Beautifully shot.
The man has not won an Oscar.
So, beautifully shot. So, James and I,
incredible.
Two thumbs up.
Yes.
One of the best Bond films. And I actually read that Daniel Craig signed on for two more movies, which is good news.
And then can I say this too?
Great. More
there's so many nods to the original franchise, with Sean Connery. It's so awesome.
Thank you for bringing that up. It was awesome. Not only the music.
Yes.
But not only the that's music. All
I do love. I do love the Adele song. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's okay until the chorus.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break and come back and talk about La Musica.
Yes, whatever they said. Later.
Music, stop. Music.
Go.
I need to understand Radiohead.
Okay.
Okay. I have given them...
Let me set the timer for it. 84 minutes. 84 minutes.
I can sum it up for you a lot quicker.
Well, now keep in mind here, I am...
I'm interested in this too, because I get it, but not to the extent that you get it.
Now, I'm going to... A little background here, because...
I'm giving 15 minutes, by the way.
That's fine. A little background here, because this is a segment that we'll use at some point. Music major. Music composition, jazz studies. I love jazz. I love classical. I love everything. I'm a huge music guy. I love unique things. You know, I'm getting into the whole Diablo Swing Orchestra now, which you need to check out, by the way.
I did.
Amazing? or not?
It's a whole other topic.
Different.
Okay, give it a... Yeah. So, different. I hear everybody talking about Radiohead. And I've given a couple albums a shot. In Rainbows, I like. Okay? But everybody says OK Computer is the album.
Two versions of Radiohead, but go ahead.
Everybody says that OK Computer is the album to listen to. I don't get it. I've tried. I've given it a couple listens all the way through, and really sat down and put effort into it. I don't get it. Help me.
So, really, at the heart of Radiohead, and I can sum this up for you because I talk about it a lot, and my poor wife has listened to me talk for endless hours about Radiohead. But Radiohead really, it's a magic trick. So you look at bands throughout history that have been able to reinvent themselves. You go back to the Beatles. The Beatles went from, you know, like an NSYNC, really. They were the NSYNC of their time. And all of a sudden they said, lose the suits.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead. We'll do our stuff. Rubber Soul, Revolver, you know, Sgt. Pepper's, and so forth. It's hard to reinvent yourself. U2 did it brilliantly. They went from Unforgettable Fire to Joshua Tree to Rattle and Hum, but to Octoon Baby, which really... reinvented their sound. They went from a indie band to really like a dance band.
It Might Get Loud. Have you ever seen It Might Get Loud?
Yes.
Okay. It's separate. Yeah.
So Radiohead went from a band that kind of unfairly got, you know, assessed the, you know, they're the saviors of rock. This is the new Pink Floyd. Guitars, lead singer, two guitars, drums. It was an amazing sound, and they came out and they basically stripped down their sound and reinvented themselves on Kid A. If you listen to Kid A, I don't think it was such a shock to go from OK Computer to Kid A, because really it's a natural progression. But in essence, Radiohead has reinvented themselves from a rock and roll band to really an avant-garde band. And why I like Radiohead is, you know, people, so James, you'll get this, so Desert Island Discs, you know, growing up in Southern California, 91X was our radio station. It was top 9 at 9.
Top Desert nine, Island Disc,
you know. If you could take one band or one, you know, 10 albums with you to a desert island, what would you take? For me, I think that I love a lot of styles of music, but Radiohead, if I want to rock
music?
Out...
Salsa music?
I like some salsa.
No, I thought you said salsa.
I think the thing with Radiohead is that if you want to rock out, they've got some albums. If you want to be mellow, they've got some albums. If you want to do some avant-garde, jazz, fusion, crazy dubstep, whatever, they've got it. And I think that...
But isn't that sort of a jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none thing? I mean,
no, it's not, because they've managed to... This is a band that has achieved success on their own terms, and they do what they want. And I think that their fan base has shrunk because they don't... They do what they want to do. So for somebody to come into Radiohead in 2012 and say, okay, tell me about Radiohead, Jesse. Can you make me a mix? Like, it would be very hard to put one disc together of these are my favorite Radiohead songs. Like, I thought it really off. I actually thought it very funny when Capitol Records released the Radiohead's greatest hits. They don't have any hits. They had Creep.
Karma Police was pretty big.
Okay, So two songs? That's not greatest hits.
No.
So
they had another one off of the Bends that was pretty big.
Mr. Roboto?
Yeah.
So they had High and Dry.
Which have you ever heard of Jamie Cullum's cover that?
Very good.
Fucking.
But
awesome.
Fake Plastic Trees was pretty big
so
too.
So to answer your question, what is the thing with Radiohead is that it appeals to a lot of different sensibilities. And it really, if you've been along this great journey, we saw Radiohead at the Hollywood Bowl in 2005, and we actually randomly got to meet Tom York and Johnny Greenwood, and I was off my ass drunk and on other things, and...
So, like a pedestal?
Tom.
Yes. You know, Tom York and Johnny Greenwood come down to the bar that we're at, and they sit there for about 10 minutes, and the whole bar is, like, staring at them. It's pretty awkward for everyone. And he gets up to leave, and I had been sitting next to him, and I kind of jump out of my chair. Because I'm like, this is probably my only opportunity to, like, talk to somebody who I really admire. But I'm like, what am I going to say to this guy?
You remember when you did that Creep song? Hell's
yeah. So I'm, like, sitting there, and I'm like, what am I going to say to this person? I've got literally 5 seconds before his bodyguards, like chuck me over the wall. And I just kind of looked at him, and I'm like, you know what, I just really want to thank you for making amazing music that my friends and I have really enjoyed. And it's, to like Radiohead is to be part of a journey. And I can't, like, give you, like, oh, okay, Computer is a great starting point. Mm-hmm. Because, honestly, I feel like it's two different bands. I honestly really don't like Pablo Honey. I like it live, but the recorded versions of the songs, it's terrible. You take the Bends, OK Computer, Kid A, Amnesiac, which is really recorded during the same period, Hail to the Thief, In Rainbows, up to King of Limbs, which I think that you kind of have to start from the beginning. It's a journey. I can't just tell you to go ahead and start here at OK and go forward.
I just, you know, I like...
Does that answer your question? I'm not sure if I really answered
it. No, it actually does. It actually does. Because, you know, I listen to a lot of, you know, prog rock. I'm a huge Yes fan, Rush. And I love it when bands can find a way to reinvent themselves rather than doing the same album over and over and over again. I love that, and I can respect that. But I'm looking for... I hate to say musicianship, because clearly they're talented musicians. But when I listen to something, I want to be challenged... You know, music. I want to listen to something that not only gets me going and I get that heartbeat popping, but I want to be listening to talented musicians. You know, Iron Maiden. I love Iron Maiden. They do the same type of thing.
But let me ask you this: if you had never heard of Iron Maiden and someone gave you their latest album for the first time, okay, I know you like. Let's just go back two albums for the first time.
Yeah.
So, for instance, if I'd never heard of Radiohead, and they're like, "Here, listen to King of Limbs," I'd be like. It's all right.
Probably a bad example because every Maiden album has similar formulas. So
okay, so take a band that's... So the thing with Radiohead is they've reinvented themselves.
Right.
King of Limbs is nothing like OK Computer. Now, Kid A is very much like OK Computer. To me, it's a natural progression. Kid A is OK without the guitars. It is melody. It's introspective. It's insular. But so is OK Computer. It was a very alienated, cold album. It's a cold album. It's a cold record with bursts of melody. And and Kid A is literally a very cold record. It is a definitive statement of the band going, you know what?
But that's great. But that's great, though. I mean, a band should do that kind of thing.
A lot of bands do
but
that.
But it still needs to be listenable. And I'm finding that some of the things that I've explored, to me, I have a hard time listening to them. And I don't know if it's because I'm too challenged or something. But make a statement, that's fine. I understand that, but it's got to be listenable.
They're a hard band. I mean, honestly, you have like a you could probably talk to this. It's really divided in two. It's everyone before OK or. I mean, so everyone like the Bends and OK, and then everyone after. It's like this.
Yeah. They're polarizing.
They don't play their rock hits anymore. Right. I don't want to hear fucking Idiotech. I don't care. Right. I want to hear Planet Telex, and I want to hear Paranoid Android. I don't want to hear Idiotech and How to Disappear Completely.
Like when they put down their instruments essentially, then I just kind of lost interest, but. I still, it's kind of like, you know, you and I have talked about this, Josh, with mm-hmm. with with Rush, it's and I'm the same with like Pink Floyd. I mean, I respect them. They're fantastic musicians, brilliant songwriters, but it, for whatever reason, it just doesn't connect.
You're either along for the ride or you're not.
I get it. That's it. It's exactly. Like Tool.
You're on or
you're
off.
Same way about Tool.
That's
I
a great
get
way of putting it.
Punch your ticket or fucking
Tool
take a walk.
Tool are fit. They're all, the whole band is filled with musicians that are badass, but I just, like, I listen to it and it just doesn't connect with me.
Sure. See,
and that doesn't mean it's bad.
And that's okay, but you know what? And that's why I think why I for me, like, Radiohead is, I just respect them so much is because they took an album that honestly is one of their best, which is In Rainbows. They said, you know what? You pay what you want.
And I respect them even more for taking it to the next. I mean, there's bands that do what they want, but bands like that.
But not everyone can do that, though. There's a very small percentage.
I really respect them for doing that.
Because they made more money off that record than, like, their previous four albums, right?
Yeah.
But it's like I said, you're either on board.
Yeah.
They lost a ton of fans after OK. That said, you know what, Kid A, I don't understand this shit.
Yeah.
I just want the guitars, man. Fucking, where are we going to rock out?
Right.
Or there were people like me who said, wow, this is really interesting. They put their instruments down and they said, how can we be five people in a room together?
Yeah.
Where are we going now?
Well, but, you know, another interesting thing that we're running short on time here in this segment, but which could probably encapsulate a whole another segment, though, is that fortunately, the timing of them doing that was almost perfect because had they done that 5 years, if you take Radiohead, you know, from when they came out to where they are now, and then you backtrack them and started them 5 years earlier,
forget it.
Because fortunately, they did that at a time when technology was changing that allowed people to connect, still find music. You know?
Right, the internet was still
You know, and so when they put down instruments and started going all embracing technology and basically being okay, computer, okay, we'll use computers. That's what I look at it, right? To make music.
We're gonna go ahead and say goodnight. We're gonna sign out. Please check us out next week on our weekly wrap up of pop culture tallywhackers and tidbits. From James, Mike, and Josh, this is Jesse signing off.
Peace.
Have a great evening, guys.